Welcome back to episode 7 of the Run It Three Ways podcast. This week, we've got a mighty episode for you with three British records to dive into, some great sessions in our training weeks, but more importantly, the boys are back together. On last week's episode, it was just Tom and I personally thought we did a good job, but as we know, the stats don't lie, and we've completely slipped down the rankings from 3rd to 13th best running podcast in the UK. So, Callum, thank God you're back to rescue the pod. How are we doing this week, guys?
Not bad, boys. Joking? I'm back.
Are you joking or is that real?
That's real, mate. I just had a little look now.
Flipping heck.
I know. It must be, people must release them on different days, and I reckon you just go up and down all week, don't you?
Definitely do. But yeah, if anyone's listening and hasn't given us a ranking on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, then maybe this is the week to do it. Feel free to leave us 5 stars, obviously, for this great running content that we're bringing to you once per week.
And also, for everyone who did leave a review in the first few episodes when we didn't even know we could receive reviews, thanks a lot, because we only realized because we actually saw that people were rating us 5 stars. So big up yourselves.
Yeah, really appreciate that. So, Callum, how's your week been? Been out in Prague, or have you got back from Prague this week?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. I was there the end of last week until the start of this week. So, you know what it's like when you go away trying to squeeze in your running. Sometimes really easy, because you're exploring new places, and sometimes, especially when you're doing more of a sightseeing trip, it's a little bit like, oh, you know, you're already doing so many steps in the day to add the run can get a bit jarring. But yeah, I was only there for a couple of easy days, so yeah, all good. What about yourself, boys?
Yeah, we just got back from Berlin. Me and Tom were on a little romantic getaway for the launch of the Nike Invincible 3, which was a really good trip. The travel though was pretty horrific. I'm sure we'll dive into that.
That's another reason to rate the podcast, because if we actually get big enough, guys, I might be able to go on these trips. So get your reviews in.
Yeah, just go over to the Distance Project, give him a few more follows on the Instagram.
Yeah, and if someone could buy me a better phone as well, so I can take some good pictures of shoes, that would be great as well.
That's the secret.
That is the key. Yeah, that is the secret.
That is so fundamental.
But you were missed. You were sorely missed, Callum. I think me and Ben was sat there at like the rooftop bar thinking, bloody hell, if Callum was here, it would have just completed things. But yeah, it was a great trip. Like you said, I'm sure we'll dive into it a bit more in our weeks. And as a bit of a cliffhanger and a reason to keep listening, you'll find out how Ben ended up in Edinburgh instead of Stansted.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh my God.
I'm so excited for the full trip story. Home.
Yeah, it's a long one, so let's dive into the week.
Shall I jump into my week first, get it out of the way, and then we can hear about your chaos?
Yeah,
sounds good.
Great. So Monday was a double for me. I did 5.5 miles in the morning at 8:10s. This is all in Prague, by the way, Monday, Tuesday. So about 45 minutes in the morning. And thanks to Andy, who asked me on 3 Strava posts what I was doing in Prague, and I finally replied to the third one to say holiday. So thanks, Andy. I don't know if you listen, but yeah, 5.5 miles Monday in the morning. It was really snowy and icy actually in Prague, so all these runs are pretty easy pace, to be honest, just because I didn't want to break a leg. And speaking of snow and ice, I was actually on the treadmill for the double in the afternoon, mainly because I was so rushed for time. So rather than having to go out and find somewhere I could do some moderate running, so I just did 4 miles at 6-minute miling, and did that thing that Ben's shown everyone to do on YouTube, where you set your Coros watch at the pace of the treadmill and it gives you the really satisfying graph, and it actually is really satisfying. So thanks, Ben, I enjoyed that.
No problem.
But the treadmill's horrible. Yeah, I hated it. Every minute of the 24 that I did was awful.
Didn't exactly have a very good view from what I'm seeing from the picture, just staring at a plug socket for minutes.
And if you can see that box in the top right, which is like the electronics box, that was playing like the hotel lobby music. And I realized you could open it, and I thought, great, I'll just plug my own music in. This will be fantastic. But then I was really scared it was going to go out like around the hotel rather than just in the gym. So I thought, oh, I'm just going to leave it. Don't get kicked out.
Yeah, you don't want everyone knowing your secret Shania Twain obsession.
Yeah, my 24 minutes of Taylor Swift classics would have wouldn't have gone down too well, I don't think. Anyway, God, that was only Monday and that took ages. So Tuesday, 7.6 miles at 7:02s. All these runs are pretty early in the morning, actually. This was 7:44 I did this one, which is pretty early for me. And I went up a massive hill as well at one point to get to this nice flat park that I went around, which was a bit of a shock to the system at that time. But yeah, just super easy again. Flew back on Tuesday night. So Wednesday this week is when I did my first session, which was on the track. This was two sets of 800, 1200, 1600, with an 800 float in between. So if I ever have a float, it's basically at my moderate pace. So it's 550 to 6 minute miling. So I did the 800, 1200, and 1600 at about a bit slower than 5K pace. I think it was scheduled for 5K pace, maybe a couple seconds a mile off. I was a little off those paces. But yeah, God, that pace feels hard when you only have the float in between compared to an easy jog, like so much harder to recover. And then I finished with three times 150 meters, just like nice and fast, smooth, almost like strides. And that's a common theme in all my training going forward now. Pretty much every session finishes with some 150s, 200s, 300s, just kind of some speed work as a build to the summer. So yeah, that's quite a satisfying session actually, because it's almost 8 miles at 520s, which, you know, that's a hard way to run 520. So that's pretty good. So yeah, and I've called that the body snatcher, by the way, because my body felt like it had been snatched by the devil. That's the only way I can describe that.
That's pretty brutal, like a little fartlek session.
Exactly like that, yeah.
And the reps are getting longer each time as well, rather than shorter, which mentally is always quite difficult, I find, with sessions like that.
Yeah, I actually like out loud said to myself, well done, at the end of this session after I finished last rep, because I don't know if you guys have these runs where you want to quit about 50 times. Like after the first rep, I was already thinking of my excuses. After the first set, I was like, cool, right, I reckon I can just tell him it was windy or this happened or that happened, like, I'm going to park it. But I got it done. And at the end, I literally said, well done, mate. That was good, to myself out loud.
Yeah, positive affirmation.
Yeah. It's nice hearing you say that, to be honest, Callum, because I bet there's plenty of people listening, myself included, who might be like, oh, Callum, you know, he's got vests and he's you know, run a sub 4 mile. I bet he's just like every session is just quality. So yeah, it's quite nice to hear you say that, to be honest.
Yeah, almost
that most sessions.
Yeah, almost every session I get the same. That's why it's so much easier training with a group, right? Like when you're with the group, you literally can't stop. Obviously, if you're injured or super fatigued, that's different. But yeah, so that was Wednesday. Thursday was just a recovery, so just 5 miles at 650s. Literally just a single run that day. So that was a pretty simple one. And then, so what day was that? Thursday. Friday was a double. So an 8 in the morning, 8 miles exactly at 6:47s. Again, pretty standard stuff. And then went out in the evening with Alice for 4 miles, including my strides, which I forgot to do in the morning. So that was six times about 20 seconds. Just fast, relax. Alice actually did some strides as well. That was pretty good. We didn't do them together, unfortunately, but there you go. And that brings us to Saturday, which was yesterday. So I had obviously my warm-up, don't know why I've told you that, speed session, which was start off with three times 150, again 20 21 seconds, kind of like to prime your body basically. And then it was two sets of three 200s and then a 300, so 200 200 300, two sets of that. It was actually supposed to be three sets, but as you can see on the photo, if you're looking at Strava, my spike's completely split in half on the last. It actually wasn't even the last rep. It was actually, I had two reps left when it happened, and I literally, as I was running, I thought, oh, my lace is undone, because my shoe felt loose, and then half my foot was outside. So I literally, and there was other people at the track as well. It was so embarrassing. There's other people, and I was like, right, I've at least got to finish this set. So I did this set, and I could tell that these long jumpers were looking at like half my foot being out the spike for the last 300. But yeah, that was, to be fair, two sets was plenty of that. That was the 200s were at 26 to 27. I think it averaged like 26.4, something like that. So that's pretty fast. And then the 300s were at 41, 42, which again, you know, I'm never going to need to run that fast in a race really, unless it's an 800. So it's good introduction to speed again. And yeah, just trying to make sure that my body knows that it needs to run fast at this pace later in the summer. But it's crazy how hard it feels to do those in the winter compared to in a few months time, hopefully.
Question, quick question in relation to the spikes. Mm-hmm. Are you someone who wears socks with your dragonflies, or are you going barefoot?
When
going
I commando? It sounds stupid, but it depends. So when I'm training, I always wear socks.
Okay.
Unless it's like really hot in the summer, because unless I've got, it sounds stupid, unless I've got a pair of socks on that's quite good at sweat wicking, I find that my feet get very moist, and then it's not nice to run in. So I'd never worn them barefoot, and I always thought, ah, it's a bit weird running barefoot. Like, I hate wearing normal shoes without my socks. But I was at a race in where did we race? I think it was in Michigan or something like that, and it was super, super humid. Like one of those where people are walking around with like ice packs on the, like being dramatic. That was me. And I just thought, no, I can't do it. The Distance Project socks, as fashionable as they are, they're just too thick. I'm going to have to sack the socks off. And I ran really well. So since then, I've just sacked off the socks altogether.
Yeah. I was just wondering if you literally had like your toes dangling out these spikes and everyone could see it, or if it was a little bit more dignified with just that.
No, but I think it was worse because I had white socks on. So it was so obvious on the red backdrop. It was like it was like a beacon. It was like, anyway. Yeah, so that was yesterday. And to be fair, my legs have not felt too bad today, which I'm surprised about, because normally when I do some faster stuff, you know, that haven't in a while, it's not great. So yeah, this morning went out for my long run, just over 16 miles, 16.36 at 6:49 a mile, so about an hour 50. Most of that off-road, probably about 9 miles of it off-road on grass, trails, mud, stuff like that. With a few of the other guys, Ian and Ollie. So yeah, that was a good run actually. I was only supposed to do 15, but squeezed a little bit extra in by accident, which is always nice just for the weekly mileage. So finished with 72.5 miles, which is yeah, a good week. Another step. I never really go much higher than that, to be honest. I only ever go up to about 76, 77. So yeah, considering one of those days was only a 5 miler, that's yeah, pretty good week from me.
Very good week. With that session you did on the Saturday there, what sort of recovery have you got for your between your 200 and 300s? Because obviously that's pretty fast. So how long sort of recoveries?
Yeah, it's one of those sessions where when he sends it, like, it's so big that I can't write on the Strava description without being Jake Smith. So I left out the recoveries, but it was supposed to be 2 minutes between the 200s. Yeah. Well, and a 300. So between reps, 2 minutes. And then between the set, it was supposed to be 8 minutes. But I'm so impatient, like, with recoveries, and if I feel like I'm fine, then I just kind of go into the rep, and unless the paces are suffering, so as long as I'm hitting the paces, then it's fine. So I actually did about a minute 40 for the between the reps, and I did 5 minutes between those two sets. So it's still plenty of recovery based off the stuff I've been doing in winter, where it's kind of off 90 seconds or 60 seconds or whatever.
Did you say it was meant to be 8 minutes?
Yeah, meant to be 8 minutes, yeah, between the sets. Yeah.
It's almost like sprinting territory, that, isn't it? When you get sprinters who do like 6x150s off 15 minutes.
Yeah, I think it's just because the thing with these sessions is, if you do get too fatigued, and I should kind of be a bit more sensible and do what I'm told, to be honest, because if you don't fully recover, then you're pushing the rep, but you're so fatigued on that rep that if you lose your form when you're running a 41-second 300, it's way more noticeable than if you're just running, say, like a kilometre rep at, you know, 10K pace or whatever. And this is all about practicing staying relaxed at that pace, getting your form. So ideally you want to kind of flush all your lactic out and be ready to go for the second set, and, you know, if anything, progress the paces. But yeah, as I said, if I'm at the track by myself in January conditions, I just want to get it done, to be honest.
That makes sense.
That's my week, boys.
Lovely week. Right, shall I go through my week next?
Yeah, go for it, mate.
Let me scroll down to the bottom.
I'm gonna get on your Strava as well. I can't wait
to get it up as well.
All right, okay, start with Monday. I went out for 11 kilometers. It was a double run day. I think I had about 24 kilometers in total on the plan. So it was just a case of get out in the morning and see what sort of mileage I hit. And for this run, I actually wore some trail shoes because it was really icy that day. I think it was about -2 overnight, probably about 0 degrees when I went out for the run. And I've noticed on my sort of country lanes where there's been quite a lot of rain recently, a lot of them are all flooded and icy, and I keep slipping and sliding about. So I thought I'd give some trail shoes. I wore the Hoka, what are they called? Tecton X, which I think I've worn maybe once or twice before. So it was nice to get out in a pair of shoes that I've not really run in too much. That was for Monday morning.
Is it on concrete? Still on concrete?
Yeah, pretty much all concrete, but a lot of the country lanes are quite like, I don't know, they're sort of lanes that have almost grass growing in the middle, so they're not like slick concrete, if you know what I mean.
They get like a thin layer of like muddy, slushy stuff on top of them anyway, don't they, this time of year anyway. So yeah, smart move that.
Yeah, I thought I found like the new hack there. So little hack for the week.
I think that's freaky, mate. That's why I asked if it was still on concrete. Trail shoes with them big lugs on the bottom on road, just like that doesn't sit well with me, actually. I think that might be horrible.
Fair enough. Well, you have to give it a try when it's icy next. And
I can't, honestly. You know, Seth James Damore, if you're listening, I once entered a competition he was running on his YouTube channel. I actually won some luminous yellow Brooks trail shoes.
Wow.
And they're at my house about 4 months after this competition, right? These shoe giveaways. They arrived about 4 months after. And I remember them arriving and thinking, I could have won any of them shoes. And True Love's picked my name out and I've got some luminous yellow Brooks here. This is a shocker. I think I wore them once and then, yeah, they, I think, gave them to a charity shop. So, yeah, I'm not a trail shoe.
That is brilliant. Oh,
true story lovely. As well. Thank you, Seth. Hashtag, what's he called? DGR Strong. Thanks.
Yeah, big up DGR.
DGR Strong. So then in the evening on Monday, I was down at the gym and I did an hour on the treadmill, easy run pace. Nothing really to report for that one, just to get some more miles for the day. And then I think me and Tom actually recorded last week's podcast Monday evening, if I remember right.
We did indeed.
Anyway, on to Tuesday, I went down to my Nonsley loop. This is my classic loop. It's been a bit too icy of late to run 400 meter circles on the road. So I've decided not to use it recently, but it was nice to be back down there. And I had 3x10 minutes threshold session with 90 seconds recovery. And the reps were pretty consistent, 321, 321, 322 per kilometer. And yeah, my legs were feeling pretty tired for this one, despite heart rate being pretty good. I always keep a track of my heart rate during threshold sessions just to make sure I'm in the right zone, not overcooking it, especially if I've got a second threshold session to do in the evening. I think it was mainly due to the last week's long run. If I remember, it was about 20 miles at a pretty steady pace. So I think my legs come Tuesday were actually still pretty tired from that. But yeah, happy to get that one done. I've got here episode 6 of the pod is live, just me and Tom that week. So if you haven't caught up on last week's episode, then go and do that. And then for my evening session, this was probably one of my favorite sessions to do in the whole threshold training principle. And it's 16x500 with 45 seconds recovery. And I've got written here, bloody good workout. And it was literally a bloody good workout because I had a nosebleed after the fourth rep. And with only 45 seconds recovery, I was really struggling to stem the flow. Not a pretty session, but I managed to control the nose. I think by about rep 10, it had sort of stopped bleeding. But
what do you think caused that?
Yeah, I was going to ask.
I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. I used to get nosebleeds quite a lot as a kid. I'm not really sure. Maybe I was picking my nose before the session, or maybe it was the cold. I have no idea. But I was wearing a really nice white long sleeve top. I think it was probably the second or third time I've worn it. It's one of those new sore ones,
Graphic print type ones.
Yeah, the graphic print, and it had blood absolutely caked down it. So I was pretty gutted, and my teammates were really worried because I wasn't doing the same session as them, but they were seeing blood on every corner of the track where I was spitting in between reps, which is pretty grim. And when I told them, yeah, I had a nosebleed and I was trying to get it under control because I should have stopped the session and gone and sorted it out. But it was never too bad. I was sort of like losing a few drops of blood per rep. So it wasn't too bad. Probably a bit too much information there, but
I've just Googled this quickly. Actually,
oh, I just did the same.
And it says, common factors include dry air, allergens and trauma, but other potential causes include medication side effects, alcohol use and hypertension. So just lay off the booze, Ben, before your sessions, I reckon.
Yeah, medication overuse, mate. That could be some red flags.
too many burritos before that one, maybe.
Yeah, far too many.
That's dodgy, that.
But in terms of the session, other than the nosebleed, it went really well. I was hitting sort of 132s per 500, and it's quite easy to know what sort of pace that is because 500 meters is obviously half a kilometer, and averaged about 304 per rep, which I was pretty chuffed with, especially with short recoveries. Starting to feel pretty good on these sessions now, which is always nice when you're coming back from fitness. Then did a warm down with Joe.
Last one quickly on this. When you're finishing a session at well, your warm down is at 8:40 p.m. Are you just having a really bloody late dinner?
Yeah, we usually eat afterwards. Yeah, at the moment, Meg has ballet on Tuesday nights, which means I have to get down to the track a little bit later than I usually would. She picks me up from the track at 9 o'clock. So yeah, by the time we eat dinner, it's about 9:30, 10:30. I think we actually got Domino's pizza that night. Bit naughty, but yeah, we had a barbecue Texas. Like,
hey, don't share too much information, mate. They're not paying us. Jesus.
They're not. But anyway, lovely Domino's pizza. Thank you very much. And then on to, what day is this? Wednesday, blimey. We had flown out to the lovely Berlin. We didn't actually fly to Berlin, though, did we, Tom?
No, we did not. So when we recorded the podcast on Monday evening, literally as soon as we got off the air, as soon as we stopped talking into our phones about running for 90 minutes, I had a message from you, Ben, saying, check this tweet or something. And it was from Jerry's son about the airport strikes in Berlin on Wednesday, the exact day we were due to fly out. So we ended up having to have a bit of last minute faff and stress, but we got a semi last minute flight to Dresden in Germany instead, and then had to get the train from Dresden to Berlin. So yeah, went around the houses a little bit, but we got there, didn't we?
Yeah, it wasn't actually too bad. I think it was nice because we were all sort of together. There was me and Tom, a couple of the Pro Direct photographer and videographers, and Sammy Nix as well. So yeah, it was actually quite a nice trip, a little bit longer than we'd planned. So by the time I got out for my run on the Wednesday, we'd already traveled for about 10 hours, but got to the hotel, chucked my luggage in my room, and I was adamant to get out as soon as possible for the run, because I knew the boys were about to go off for dinner and I didn't want to miss out. So I got going on this run. It was 10 miles easy, which was in the plan, and I actually got going pretty quickly. It's just one of those runs where I felt nice and fresh. Again, had heart rate monitor on and it just stayed really low. So I was like, just going to roll with it. It was one of those where I just wanted to get it done and get back to the hotel as quickly as possible. So average 4:17s per kilometer. Did a couple of laps of Treegarden in Berlin. Saw the gate where Kipchoge run through for his world record marathon, 2:01. I wasn't quite going at that pace though, but a nice little run in the dark. Again, very, very chilly. I think it was about 1 degree again, but I didn't slip over, thankfully. And then we went out for a lovely vegan Chinese sort of meal, didn't we? That was nice.
It was fantastic. Yeah, we had all
vegan
sorts, didn't we?
Chinese meal.
Yeah, it was pretty damn good.
I think it was technically just Asian fusion. Like, there was all sorts. We had some summer rolls in peanut dipping sauce. We had spring rolls. We had like these prawn type things that weren't actually prawns, obviously, like rice and like not duck, but duck type stuff. Oh my god, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, really good. And I just got to dinner basically as the rest of the guys were eating the starters, so I managed to order a main pretty quickly and it all came together, which was nice. So yeah, I literally got to the hotel, changed, went out for dinner, went to bed, and that was Wednesday.
What Ben's trying to say is, whilst we were, me, Sammy and the couple of video guys from ProDirect were walking around trying to find somewhere, and went one restaurant and it was full and we couldn't get in, and then the other one was fully booked until February. Ben was out having a nice little jog, and then he just rocked up when we had finally found somewhere, had a pint, had some food, and that was that. So you got a good deal
there.
Yeah,
happy days. Yeah, it's pretty lucky there. Moving on to Thursday. So I had 4x5K in the plan, and I was going to do this around between 3:30 and 3:25 per kilometer, which I think is roughly where my marathon pace is at the moment. But I was actually feeling pretty tired this day, having traveled the day before. So I decided to cut the session down a little bit. And I was also tight for time because the Nike event was in the afternoon. But I got down to, I found a treadmill to Callum's delight. It was freezing cold and it was really icy out. So I didn't fancy trying to find somewhere in Berlin to try and do a 5K loop to basically do this session. So I went down to a gym called McFit. Paid my 10 euros. They didn't take cards, so I had to go and find a cash point, give my 10 euros over to the bloke, and he let me use the treadmill for an hour and 15 minutes. And the session was, yeah, 3x5K. Decided to cut it short a little bit just because of the fatigue and the travel and all that, which I think was pretty sensible. I'm glad I did this because as I got going through the reps, I didn't feel particularly great on this one. There was no aircon in the gym, so I was getting really hot. So I was glad to see the end of it, to be honest. I did have a nice view out the window, though, of the Berlin traffic, which has always made a nice change. And for the reps, I ran 17:40 for the first 5K, 17:10 for the second 5K, and 16:40 for the last 5K. So averaged around 15 kilometers of volume at what I expect to be my marathon pace in Osaka.
So what pace is that? Sorry, I've got no idea what that is for a marathon. What's the marathon time?
Around 2:25. Got for you. The marathon.
Thank you, mate.
No worries. But yeah, got that session done. And then in the afternoon,
Hang on. What I love about this is the fact that most people, you couldn't pay most people to run 20 quid on a treadmill.
20 quid. Is that further or less than euros?
I got confused in my head between euros and kilometers. But do you know what I mean? You can pay most people to run on a treadmill for that long, and you've actually paid to do it.
Yeah, that is pretty mad when you think about
it.
You
are some bloke, Ben.
And it's like it's like 80p a mile or something you've paid as well.
Quick math.
But I tell you what, it was worth it because this kilometer was in kilometers an hour instead of miles. And whenever I run in the UK, the treadmills are on miles and I have to change my watch. So this one was in Ks and it was, yeah, it made the session a little bit more pleasant. Worth a tenner, I reckon.
Yeah, you've spent worse tenners. I know I have. So anyway.
Exactly. Money well spent. And then in the afternoon, just a classic little 3K with Paula Radcliffe. Nothing really to talk about there.
Well, what's actually interesting about this is I was just looking up Paula Radcliffe, just, you know, a few stats about her. To be honest, I was actually trying to see how old she was.
59.
If you're listening, Paula. Sorry.
No, not 59, 49, but, sorry.
It's going to say, bloody hell, Ben.
You've run 3K there in 16:24, which is almost exactly double of what her 3K national record is. I presume she's still got the national record, which is 8:22. So,
wow.
There you go. Little stat for you. Monaco 2002. Might watch it back after the pod.
What a woman, by the way. She's, you know, you get some of these like athletes who have been around for a long time and they might have a bit of a superiority complex and, you know, all the rest of it. She is like the nicest woman you'll ever meet in your life, I think.
I have to agree.
I couldn't believe it. She's just like a normal mum. She's talking about building skate parks for her kids and like just by hand doing it herself. She still runs lows as well. She did 2 hours like the day before this event in the morning. She's still running like some pretty serious mileage. So yeah, God bless Paula Radcliffe. She's one wonderful,
lovely human being. Yeah, she runs every day and goes to the gym 3 times a week.
Yep.
I couldn't believe that when she said that when in the interview bit. But anyway, good for
she's
her.
In some shape, isn't she? For 49 years old, like for any age, she's in serious condition. So yeah, if you're listening, Paula, good stuff.
I'm sure she is. Were you going to say something there, Callum?
No, I was just going to tell you all of her PBs, but I won't bore everyone. They can Google it themselves.
Fair enough. So that was... Thursday?
Obviously I wasn't at the event and neither was anybody else listening. So what's the context of this? Why did you run 3K? Was it part of the event or what was this?
Yeah, so it was a Nike Invincible 3 event. We all got given the shoes and then we tested the shoes on one of these like weird treadmill things. They're the ones that you sort of power yourself. They're like curved shaped. And you had Paula Radcliffe up the front. Basically it was like a spin class but on a treadmill, and she was like, just run easy and then run as fast as you can for a minute, then run easy and then 45 seconds, then run easy, then 30 seconds. It was kind of like a little bit of an interval session.
Was anyone taking it really seriously? Be honest, you don't have to name names.
I think actually it was
when
there was
you
a lot
looked
of people
over
trying
I can
to
hear
film
Tom
it.
I can hear Tom laughing in the background, so
I wasn't there. I wasn't at this part of the event.
Wait, so, Ben, be honest, Ben. When you looked over, were some content creators or whoever were there, were they just nailing it, trying to show Paul Radcliffe how quick they could run a minute?
Yeah, there definitely was some blokes at the back absolutely going for it.
I knew there would be. Because I can tell off your average. You've averaged 8.46 a mile. So I know that you were clearly just, probably picking up the pace a little bit, but just keeping it kind of,
controlled. I was just having a bit of fun.
You'd already done your run, but I know some people, this was their shining moment. They'd be flown out to Germany. Paul is there. I bet they absolutely nailed it.
Yeah, there were some guys actually going for it, that's for sure.
Jerry's son, full lactic, I reckon.
Women by the end.
Absolutely. There were some sweaty people at the end, that's for sure.
Couldn't even press the camera trigger the next day because his gums were so bad.
Okay, finally on to Friday, which was the last run in Berlin. And this one was with the lovely Tom Folan. We got out nice and early, 7:56, for our first proper run in the Invincibles, which, was pretty good. Pretty miserable weather, wasn't it, Tom?
It wasn't lovely.
Yeah, we got it done. It was a 10K steady run, which was in Tom's plan. I just decided to jump in with whatever he was doing. We ran 3 kilometres back to Trade Garden, the park, and we had a lovely steady 10K together, didn't we?
We did indeed. Yeah, I enjoyed that. It was one of them where there's just like precipitation just in the air. So it's soggy, but not actually raining, freezing cold. But this park, my God, if you've never been to this park, if you go to Berlin, make it like top of your list. There's a few little crossings with traffic lights and stuff, but generally speaking, it's one of the best places I've run in like a major city, I think. You've got lovely flat tarmac cycle paths mixed with like nice man-made trails, dead flat, just beautiful running, really. I had a great time with you, Ben.
It was a lovely run. And then after that run, we filmed a bit of a first run impressions video for the Pro Direct YouTube channel, which hopefully will be out fairly shortly. Any updates on that, Tom?
Yeah, so the shoe launches on the 2nd of Feb, officially.
Right.
So the wear test will be out before then, basically.
Good stuff. So then, I must admit, had a pretty horrific journey back from Germany, back to the UK. Long story, but I'll try and quickly go through it. Basically, Nike had hired a agency to book all the flights for the influencers. So Tom's flight was all sorted through ProDirect, staff travel, blah, 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 blah. My travel was all booked through this travel agency, which no other way to describe it were an absolute load of crap.
What's their name? What were they called?
I don't know. They were a German agency, so I'm not quite sure. But anyway, horrific journey back. I didn't get my boarding pass for this flight until I was basically asleep the night before. So I didn't check my boarding pass until the morning. And turns out they'd booked me on the completely wrong flight. So when my driver came to pick me up from the hotel at 12:10, my flight was on the runway at Berlin Airport. So there was absolutely no chance I was making that.
Did you tell him? Did you try and tell the German taxi driver what was going on?
No, I didn't bother. I was so fuming at this point.
But this bloke was stood there. bless him. He was stood in the corner of the hotel with like an iPad with a Nike swoosh on it. He must have stood there for about half hour whilst we were
trying to figure out
your flight.
God bless him. So that was pretty fun. Got to the airport without a boarding pass for a flight. Meanwhile, this travel company, through about 25 emails, is trying to sort me out a new flight to somehow get back to Stansted, which is where my car was parked. And they were like, are you sure you can't make your flight? And I was like, I'm not even at the airport and it leaves in 10 minutes. So I was like, you do the maths.
Stick the Vaporfly 3 on, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't even think that would have got me there. But somehow managed to get a flight or two flights home. I had to leave Tom and James and Lewis, the Pro Direct guys, at the airport, which was pretty sad. Let them went through security and I just had to sit in a cafe while some German agency tried to find me a flight home, which I didn't have much confidence in, having the trauma of the way out, to be honest with you. But anyway, they got me on a flight. I went to Edinburgh, got my luggage. My luggage got absolutely battered on that flight. and my suitcase was completely broken when I got through.
I didn't know these details. This is quality.
Yeah. Have you seen the picture, Callum? Have you seen the picture of
suitcase? But I thought it had just broken.
No, it came out. It came on the conveyor belt and the handle was just completely snapped off.
I thought it had just happened. I didn't even put two and two together that they had been broken in transit.
Broken in transit. So now I've got a 20 kilogram suitcase that doesn't have a handle, so I can't pull it along. So I've got to basically carry it everywhere I go. So I went through security in Edinburgh. I had a lovely burrito, actually.
Did you have to keep swapping hands?
Yeah, it was honestly, I was absolutely knackered.
Oh, hey,
that was the worst bit of the trip. I didn't mind the two flight and
Did you vlog this part?
No, I didn't, mate.
Oh, Ben,
that would have been great.
Oh, that's a missed opportunity.
It is indeed. Stopped off in Edinburgh, had a little burrito, bit of haggis, and then was on my flight home. And I got back to Stansted Airport for about 10 o'clock. The good thing was I went straight through and didn't have to do my passport or anything like that, because obviously Edinburgh is still in the UK. But the bad thing was, is you sort of go out the back way of Stansted Airport, which was about, no joke, a kilometre and a half, I'd say, from where my car was parked. And I sort of parked in the short stay car park and you have to walk there. So I've got this 20 kilogram suitcase without a handle. I can't drag it. And I've got to carry it all the way back to my car. And that was, that took me at least 20 minutes swapping hands. I even had to stop and have breathers. And it was a pretty tragic journey home. But only 30 minutes in the car when I finally got to it. And I got home about 11 o'clock, when I should have been back home if I had got my original flight about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So
that's brutal. Have you given your feedback to the organisers?
I haven't, but I feel like we definitely will. I'll speak with ProDirect guys and see if we can write a letter or an email, to Nike.
100%. Just clip this. Just clip this, boys. Just clip this.
Yeah.
Put it on a little floppy disk and get that sent over.
Floppy disk.
It was not fun at all. But the trip itself was really nice. Lovely company. Met some really nice people. So can't complain. And I survived to tell the story. But then I was up nice and early on Saturday morning, sort of a detox park run, I'm going to call this one. Just a little run with my little sister, 5:30 average for a 27 minute park run. That was lovely. That got rid of all that stress from the flight. And then on Saturday afternoon, I went out for a bit of a top up. I'd sort of done the calculations on Strava that if I didn't go for a second run on Saturday, then my mileage would drop a little bit for the week. And I wasn't prepared to see that happen. So got out for a 40 minute run. Felt pretty good, actually. Nice and fresh in the Invincible threes. My easy run paces started to come down a little bit. So that's always a sign that you're starting to feel a little bit fitter. And then to finish off the week, I did a long run today with the lovely Scott Cousins, who's one of the best runners in the Essex area. I think last week we gave him a shout out for breaking 50 minutes for 10 miles. So he's a serious runner. We've had some good duels over the last few years. Usually he beats me, but recently I got him in a 10K, a very wet 10K out in Billericay. So it's nice to do a long run at a pretty solid pace with a guy who's prepared to sort of do the full distance with you. That's pretty rare, especially when in this marathon training block. And Scott himself is training for Manchester. I think it's in April, isn't it? Manchester Marathon.
Yeah, that's right.
So he's up for doing long runs at steady paces, which is pretty good. And we got out for 36, just over 36 kilometres at 3:38 per kilometre average for a total of 2 hours and 13 minutes of running, which is, really good run. Felt a little bit fatigued towards the end, and a little bit sicky, to be honest with you. I'd had four gels across the run, so I think maybe that was the upper limit of what I can handle on that sort of in that 2 hour window. But yeah, really good run to finish the week.
What were you chatting much? What do anything cool come up in conversation? I'm always interested in what runners talk about. Did you actually talk about anything that wasn't related to running? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think so. This is quite a steady pace, so we didn't have like full on conversations. It was mainly just little, like, I don't know, maybe minute long chats. But
I always find that interesting because I go out running with people and it's weird. You just, when I come back, I'm like, we spoke about running whilst running for at least three quarters of that run, you know, and I always feel really boring. But What I wanted to say about this run, Ben, apart from it being really good, is I want to give a shout out to a guy called David, who's commented on your post, and he said, it's good to see you're working on your stamina this time, Ben. So clearly wasn't happy with your training methods for the last marathon.
Oh, that's a lovely comment. And cheers, David.
Working on your stamina is the most vague, you know, every time you go out running, you're working on your stamina. But
I wonder what sort of runner David is. Should we have a little look?
Well, he's actually a mountain biker by the looks of it. But
oh, okay.
So thanks.
So he does gets his stamina training on his bike.
Yeah, so maybe we could integrate some downhill biking into our training. But yeah, keep the comments coming in on Ben's runs, guys. Tell him where he can improve, because I enjoy actually looking through them.
Yeah, you seem to always love going diving through the comments, Callum. I appreciate that. You're very thorough with your analysis.
Oh, it's the best bit about Strava, seeing what runners have got to say about each other's runs. It's I enjoy it. Great week that, Ben. What was your mileage?
Yeah, it was a pretty big week. Kilometrage 157.8.
And what? How high are you going to go?
Next week, I've got 100 miles in the plan, and that's probably going to be it for this training block. It's been a pretty short one, so I don't want to really push it any further and risk being really fatigued when it comes to actual race day. So I'm pretty happy with mileage at the moment. Keep those two session days and a solid long run. As long as I keep those, I'm not too fussed about the easy running. Just keep it where we're at the moment.
Yeah, and final question, Ben. Are you going to start, or are you doing everything in the Mizuno shoe that you're going to be running in, or are you still just wearing like Alpha Flies and other stuff to train in?
So for the first, I think, three long runs of this block, I used the Mizuno shoe. And for the last two, I've used Alpha Fly. Just depends on how I'm feeling.
Yeah, got you.
Nice to just keep rotating through the shoes. But yeah, Alpha Flies today.
Good stuff. Good week, mate.
I remember, Ben, when we first started this podcast, we were all a bit buggered, to be honest, weren't we? But I remember you in particular being quite concerned about like the time span that you had to train for Osaka, and, you know, you're quite ill and just not fit. I think your fitness, you said, was at an all-time low. But now, that's a big run. To just bank that after the week that you'd had already, you know, with a couple of decent sessions and the travel and like the runs at times that you wouldn't normally, like 7 in the evening when we got to Berlin and stuff. Like, that's, there's some going. And yeah, you're in shape, that's for sure. So just shows, I suppose, that you can come into fitness pretty quickly.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, it's been 4 weeks of consistent running now. I've started pretty low in terms of fitness, but it's quickly come back. So yeah, if you're somebody who's coming back from an injury or a few weeks of downtime, then it does come back, and probably quicker than I thought, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and as David says, you just got to work on that stamina, baby.
Exactly. 36 kilometer runs every week, get that stamina up, and you can run a 220 marathon no problem.
Right. Speak now onto them, the main act of the week.
The Tom. Main act. I don't know about that, but it was a good week, actually. It was my best week. Yeah, best week for a very, very, very long time. And ties quite nicely into those sentiments that we just discussed, actually, coming back from injury or illness or whatever and finding fitness again. so anyway, Monday, lunchtime, easy 10K. First run from the new house. And I said on Strava, I'm not sure if it's colder inside or outside, because I still hadn't quite worked out my heating, and it was... Yeah, it wasn't pretty the first couple of nights in the new gaff. But apart from that, nothing really to report. And then just 4x100 meter strides afterwards. So that was Monday.
Can I ask you a question, please?
Of course you can.
Why are your strides in a different Strava activity?
Yeah, I was wondering if this was going to come up.
And it has come up.
Yeah, so Ben would attest to this as well.
You've had all week to think of your response, so here we go.
It's, for me, it's the exact same reason why a warm-up, the session and the cool-down are separate activities. Like, for me, if it's an easy 10K plus strides, the strides are additional, and therefore I'll stop my watch after 10K, do a bit of, like, drills and wiggling about, because my legs always just feel a bit shit, to be honest, after running easy. So I'll do some strides and drills and whatnot. We'll do some drills before.
Bit of wiggling.
Before you're wiggling, do you not just pause your watch and then do all the wiggling and then just press start on your watch and do the strides?
Well, I mean, you could do, couldn't you?
Well,
you definitely could do that.
Something to think about for next week.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Tomorrow morning, got easy plus strides again. We'll see. I might keep the watch rolling just for you, Callum.
I'll tell you what, we'll put a poll as well on the Instagram and we'll ask people whether they do the maybe not about strides, but we'll ask them about the warm-up and cool-down because I think that's a poignant one.
Okay, and there's another run this week where this will come into question once more, I believe.
I'm excited.
But anyway, Tuesday. Now, where the bloody hell do we start with Tuesday?
Look at those legs.
Christ. So this was... I don't know what happened. I don't know why it felt so much colder than the rest of the weeks have. Because it's been bloody cold for ages, right? But this was just outrageous. I think it's probably got something to do with the fact that it was early. So I started to warm up at 7:30. It was about -3, -4, but it was 100% humidity. So again, it was absolutely freezing cold, but the air was just wet. But anyway, I jogged down and I was very sensible. I'm always pretty sensible when it's this cold. I had I was wearing half tights, but I had long tights over the top, jacket, you know, gloves with these little mitten things over the top of the gloves. Like I was pretty well dressed for this warm up, but my face was just numb immediately. Got down to the housing estate loop as you do, and the session itself was 20 by 1 minute off 30 seconds. 3 minutes jog and then a 5K progression. But yeah, if you look at the picture on Strava, I've never in my life had icicles on my legs before, like on my actual leg hairs. And
that is mad.
It's probably the coldest I think I've ever been, to the point where I was a little bit worried, to be honest, at how cold I was. Because I realised very shortly after starting this session that when I looked down, my legs were white. And I thought, what is that on my leg at first? And then I realised that it was like icicles, like ice particles. And then as the session progressed, I couldn't really blink much. I was losing vision because my eyelashes also had icicles on them. The brim of my hat had like frozen. And by the end of this session, my laces had frozen solid as well. They were like, they were stuck in like a fixed position. But just quickly, the session itself was actually pretty good. So the minute reps were prescribed as between like 10K and 5K feel. I think I averaged, they were a bit on and off, mainly just because I think a minute rep when you're going out and back on the road, sometimes you watch lap your watch a little bit later and so on and so forth. But they averaged between 320 to 310-ish, I think. Okay, that is. And then the 5K progression was meant to start at about 3:45s, worked down in blocks of like 5 seconds to get progressively quicker, with the last K being at 3:25, and I averaged 3:34 per K for that 5K, so 17:51. So the session itself was actually pretty good. Like I felt decent throughout. But the horror of this session came afterwards when I'd finished and my hands, you know when your hands go numb, right? And you don't have much functionality in them.
Mm.
My sore gloves had little icicles on them. I knew I was in trouble because I knew I had to unlace the Saucony Endorphin Pro 3 to relace up my Shift 3 and jog home. And I literally couldn't use my hands. I couldn't zip my jacket up. I could barely unzip my bag to take my shoes out. And because my laces were frozen solid, like it would have been hard to undo them at the best of times, let alone when your fingers don't work. So I was getting a bit late for work at this point. And I really didn't know what to do because I had no way to get my hands warm enough for them to be functional again.
Should have put them down your pants, mate.
Well, I did do that. I also put them under my armpits and all sorts. And then anyway, after about 5 minutes of walking up and down, blowing into my hands, doing everything I possibly could to try and get them warm enough to untie my laces, a postwoman arrived.
No way. And
I've seen this postwoman before because she obviously does the round at about the same time as I'm often running laps around the house in the States. We give ourselves a little nod. She probably thinks this guy's an absolute lunatic, running endless laps around the house in the state, but she's very pleasant. And so she kind of looked and was like, are you okay? And I was like, no, not really. I was wondering if you you might be able to help me. And I had to request that she undid my frozen Endorphin Pro 3 laces.
You didn't ask like that, did you?
No, I didn't.
Thank God.
I said, this is a very strange question, but can you please help me untie my laces because my hands don't work. I'm like... So she did, bless her. So and then she had to wait for me to try and claw my tights on and whatnot and put my like cool down shoes back on. And then the most embarrassing part is I had to ask her to tie my laces up so I could then jog home.
That's tragic, mate.
This must have been like at least 5 minutes, which in the presence of a stranger is so awkward. Did you not offer to drop some letters off on the way home or something as an exchange?
Oh, I was in no fit state to offer anything, to be honest, apart from my condolences that she had ended up in a position of, you know, down on her knees, tying my shoelaces up. It was, yeah, it must have been a sorry sight. And I hope to God that I never see that postwoman ever again. Actually, I hope I do, actually. I might need to get her some, like, chocolates or something. Like a present.
Or a pair of shoes.
Yeah, so that was appalling. And then I had an absolute death march back home where I just felt like I was a solid ice cube. And it took, to be honest, it took most of the morning to warm up again. And then bearing in mind, as soon as I got in the door and opened up my laptop, it was full blown into trying to sort out a last minute flight to get to Germany to get to this event. So Tuesday was a bit stressful, but the run itself was great. And then later that afternoon, went down to London to stay in a little hotel next to Stansted before flying out the next morning. So the next morning, Wednesday, I was on the treadmill, very selectively chose a hotel which had a 24-hour fitness center. There was no aircon or anything, so it was pretty shambolic inside this little fitness center, to be honest. But 6:58 in the morning, jumped on the treadmill, easy 45 minutes, 440 per K, 2% incline, so like 8 mile per hour, and just cracked on. And to be honest, quite enjoyed it. Don't mind an easy run on a treadmill. And it always sets you up well for the day, I find. Like, if you've got to wake up early, if you can get your run done first thing, get back, have a shower, get a OTE, like hydro tab down you. and yeah, felt pretty good after that, to be honest. Sets you up nicely for a long day of traveling. So that was Wednesday, flew out to Dresden and then got the train to Berlin, like we discussed. And then Thursday, again, rest day, as is normal, which was pretty handy for me, to be honest, because basically Ben, as an influencer, as a running content creator, as he likes to be known, his main part of this Nike Invincible event day was like an experience, right, that they'd put on from 2 till 5, where you went through all of these different rooms, you did some deep breathing, you ran on a treadmill with Paula Radcliffe and blah, blah, blah. Whereas for me, the main part was from about 8:45-ish in the morning until 1, where I had an interview with Paula Radcliffe, which is why I know that she built a skate park for her son in the garden. He's really good on the scooter, apparently.
Yeah, I think we'll be the judge of that. Paula, send us in some clips.
yeah, that was that. So interview with Paula Radcliffe. Then we spoke to the lead product line manager for the Invincible, there from the very first Invincible all the way up to the Invincible 3, and the Invincible 4 is already in like its very late stages of testing. So just it's interesting to know how far in advance these development cycles are compared to where we might see them as the consumer. And then so Laura Waitman,
can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah, go on.
Because I think I know on the Instagram account, you boys we've already discussed it off the podcast, that we've got some messages about your job, Tom, and like how people get involved with, you know, product development and all that kind of, you know, the business of running, if you will. So yeah. When you say that already developed a new shoe, I'm going to ask a really what might seem a stupid question. So have they had the feedback from, say, the Invincible 3 from all the elite athletes and stuff that have used it, and they've already worked out how they're going to improve it for the 4? Or do they have to wait and see how the public use it? Or like, how does that work, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So this product line manager that we spoke to, a guy called Julian, lovely bloke, really, really knowledgeable, as he should be. But he had already had the Invincible 3 in its final stage, so in its production state, the shoe that we're wearing now and blah, blah, blah. He'd had that for about 9 months already.
Wow.
So he'd got hundreds and hundreds of miles in them. So they'll have like a pool of wear testers, and oftentimes brands will send shoes out to, you can sign up to be a wear tester for Puma, for New Balance, for whoever. But you have to sign like an NDA, like a non-disclosure agreement that you won't speak about the shoe. You don't get to keep it. You just have to run a certain amount of miles in it and then collate your feedback and send it back to the brand. So that happens quite a long way before the shoes actually get launched. And then obviously the athletes will have had, I'm sure you've all seen like the Alphafly 3 is already floating around on the feet of you know, lots of athletes out in Kenya, and Connor Mance wore them at the Houston Half. And, you know, so that's a shoe which is at least a year off being released, but they've already got what is going to be quite a late stage prototype on the feet of these athletes. So they're collecting data all the time in the lab from their athletes, from the actual product managers themselves, and like a pool of wear testers. So it's weird, really, when you go to these events and you see like all the hype behind this launch, when in their heads, they're already like 5 steps ahead looking at the next shoe or the next shoe after the next shoe. So it's an interesting one. But it's cool to speak to these people and just understand a little bit more about what actually goes into this design process, because it's a massive deal, right? It's a huge investment to put a running shoe out there, especially when you change it so dramatically from like the second version to the third version. But anyway, that was good. It was a nice morning. Always enjoy talking about running. But yeah, it's nice to meet new people and get more of an insight into the product and whatnot. So that was Thursday, nice little rest day. And then Friday was the run with Ben. So I won't go into too much detail on it, but yeah, I just had a 10K steady. So we did like a little bit of a jog to the park and a jog back from the park in the Invincible 3 with Ben, 3:52 average. And yeah, I really like the Invincible 3 so far. It feels a lot more versatile than the previous two versions, I think. So yeah, I'm sure Ben will have lots of content coming out on that on his YouTube channel soon. And like we said, we shot a wear test for the Pro Direct channel as well. So don't need to go into too much detail about the shoe, but it's very good. And Callum, you're getting your hands on it soon as well, aren't you?
Well, bloody hell, I don't know if I am. I don't know. What can I say, boys? I saw some emails arrive to my account that suggested I was getting a shoe. Has anything arrived? I don't know. Unless I see the postman jogging around in a new pair. I've not got anything. So as of now, I'm just like the listeners. I've got no clue. But I'll be sure to update you if they arrive.
Well, first thing Monday morning, Callum, I will chase that up for you and make sure that they are in transit and on their way.
Don't make me sound too keen, though. Play it cool.
Yeah, you're just hoping that the postman don't run off of them. That's how we'll frame it.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Nice. Okay, so Friday, bit of a mammoth journey back. It takes me about 4 hours just to get home from Stansted Airport. So on top of the travel from Berlin to get to Stansted, it was like 9-10 hours of travel on the Friday afternoon. So I didn't get back until quite late. And because of the travel and stuff and the week being a little bit disjointed, still did the runs I was supposed to do, but I wasn't sure what Andy would want me to do on this Saturday. So dropped him a little message on the train home. And he said he wanted me to do 12 miles, which filled me with joy. Joy that I cannot explain, because I've been begging for long runs, like proper long runs for ages. But I knew that he was right and I wasn't ready for him and blah, 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 blah. But for him to finally say 12 miles, and not just 12 miles easy, but like a solid long run, I was very, very, very happy. So
Andy must have been drunk when he gave you this, I reckon. You'll be back to 8 miles next week, buddy.
No. If he was drunk, then he can keep boozing, because I'm here for it. But yeah, I did a little jog to this loop that I really like using, to be honest, but don't often go there, just because where I've moved house to, I'm now at the very top of the town. So I don't have to run up a massive hill in order to get to this loop anymore. I'm sort of just there, which is really handy. But it's a pretty undulating loop, to be honest. It's rarely flat. It's about 7.5K in total. And there's a couple of pretty meaty climbs, as well as a handful of like just long, gradual inclines. Obviously sprinkled with some nice downhills as well. So it's a good loop, to be honest, for like just good, honest work. But the 12 miles itself was broken down into, again, this is where Andy mixes up paces and stuff, but it was 6 miles at 4-minute Ks, and then 6 miles at 340 per K. So yeah, quite tasty, to be honest. It came to 19.36 kilometers, which I'm guessing is about 12 miles, at 347 per K average. And I lapsed my watch manually after each 9.66 K or 6 miles. And the first block, which was meant to be in 4 minute Ks, I averaged 356. And then the second one, I averaged 339. So pretty much spot on. And with, like I say, with the undulation in there, I was really happy with how this felt. It's the longest, like, sustained, steady effort I've done for ages, probably about 3 months. And it was a good test of the old flippy floppy leg. And the flippy floppy leg was not flippy floppy at all. It was pretty solid. I didn't feel any fatigue aside from just general tiredness from, like, the last climb. So yeah, I was really, really happy with that, to be honest.
That's really solid, mate. And I think that's the great thing about the podcast, as all being at different points in training. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to relate to, you know, can be a bit daunting getting out for the long one once you're, you know, building back up, having not done it for a while. But yeah, you got out there and smashed it, mate. So looking good.
Have you seen Andy's comment on this one, Tom?
What's he said?
He says, nice and steady, not quite a double session yet, but heading in the right direction. He's had a little jab at me there, I reckon.
Yeah, no, he has. Yeah, I think it's because last week when I did 8x3 minutes and I said it was a bit of you, but I didn't double it up. Yeah, I think he's just having a little dig. But yeah,
heading in the right direction, which means next week's, Tom, you're doing the double threshold day.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think soon enough, we'll get to that sort of level. But yeah, the best thing about this is how sexy it looks on Strava with all of me crowns and flipping CRs. And I don't pay any attention to that. I don't suppose you boys do either. But I'm now the course record holder of the Big Charfield Loop. So yeah, very proud of that.
Do you know, I think what is a real sign of making it as a runner or being comfortable as a runner is when you stop getting annoyed that people have taken your crowns when they're on the bike. Does that make sense? Because when I started using Strava, mate, if I got at a crown, right, and you see someone's done it running 320 per mile pace or whatever, obviously they've not done that, I used to get annoyed about it, and then I realised, Callum, who gives a shit, mate? You know what I mean? But I still see people raging about it on Instagram and stuff, going, I can't believe I'm going to report them and stuff like that. Mate, some of the groups on Facebook of people raging about it and how Strava need to fix the bugs and all this. It's like, mate, just be comfortable. If you know you ran, it's all good. You know, they're on a bike. So I think that's a big sign. If you're out there and you complain about that stuff, don't do it.
Yeah, listen, don't bother. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and if you're a cyclist, like David from the last conversation, then don't click run when you do your Strava. Click bike.
Simples.
Yeah,
simples. Exactly.
Job done.
But yeah, after this run, I had a little shuffle home, which was half walk, half waddle, half very slow jog. Because, I was just trying not to shit myself. It happens, doesn't it? I probably ate way sooner before that run than I normally would do. And I ate probably more than I normally would before a run as well. So, yeah, just wasn't particularly used to it. And black coffee never really goes particularly well before a run for me. But I was tired after the travelling day, so I thought I'd give myself a little bit of a top up and pay the price for it. But that was Saturday. And then that brings us on to Sunday today, where I got out at 6 p.m. on a Sunday run, which is shocking behavior, but summer's got chicken pox, which...
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's not the most fun in the world. So she didn't sleep very well last night. It was up, like, itchy, and you have to rub this weird, like, moussey stuff all over her, which, yeah, wasn't brilliant. So didn't sleep that good, and then was with her all day until I dropped her off back on the train home. So not by herself, by the way. I don't put my three-year-old daughter on the train home by herself. I got on the train with her, dropped her off, and then got the train back, and then ran after that. But yeah, just an easy 60 minutes, 12.5K, 448 per K average in the Invincible 3. Had a nice little podcast in. And that was that, 87.35 kilometers for the week. So quite a nice little jump from last week, to be honest, and feeling good for it.
Yeah, really solid
that's
week.
That's lovely. And you've got a very satisfying Strava graph as well, actually.
Oh, I have.
5 weeks.
I have. I hope
you set the bar a bit
continuing.
Higher this week, though.
Yeah, we mentioned Seth Damore earlier in the episode. That's if I keep going to like 230k a week, my Strava bars are going to look sensational.
That's the goal, is it? Just keep building mileage, never race.
Building. Yeah, just keep building. Run as much as physically possible every waking minute of the day.
And I'm if you want to,
just every single day.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you want to contact Tom or Ben for coaching, you can find their details anywhere you like. That's their philosophy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, lovely stuff. Oh, well, pretty good weeks there.
Very good weeks, I think, boys. And it'll be interesting to see how you get along next week, Tom, because you're racing, aren't you? A week from today's recording. So when people are listening to it, you know, it'll be a few days until you're racing. Has Andy given you a particular target? Is it about like the process and how it feels? Was it about a time or what's the crack with that?
Yeah, so I've got my week through already, and I've got a fairly normal session on the Wednesday and a little like tune up type session on the Saturday. So it's not, you know,
on the Saturday.
Yeah, like the day before. It's not really a session. It's just like a mile steady, some like 200s or something, and then another mile steady at the end. So it's not anything hefty. But I think he just said like just have fun on this 10K. Because it's not based off this training. I'm not doing specific training to run a certain time for a 10K, right? It's just I've done general decent sessions over the last 3 or 4 weeks. And it'll be good just to have a hard hit out on, by all accounts, what looks like one of the worst courses you can ever run.
Well, before you start making all these excuses, what's the plan? Are you going to try and go out hard? Are you going to try and win? Are you going to run to a certain pace? Is it heart rate? What's the plan?
I'm going to run hard. Like, I'm not going to just jog around, that's for sure. Time-wise, I've got absolutely no idea, just because, like what you said, Ben, you ran 32-something, and then a week or two later, you ran 30:56, and you put it mostly down to the winding of the course and out and back nature of it and weird bits. So I've got no idea, literally no idea what I'm going to run for it timing wise. So I'm not going to just.
I think that's quite good for a little competition. Then I don't know if we can actually give a prize away, but just for pride, maybe I think we could definitely do some kind of prediction. Because if you don't have a clue, I know I don't have a clue either. No one else is going to have a Scooby, are they? So I reckon it could be quite a good guessing game.
We should do that every time one of us races. Actually, let's do a little sweepstake every time one of us has a race. We'll do a little Instagram competition. And if you win some OTE flapjacks or...
We'll get some sponsors on board to give away some free stuff for you.
Or Ben will just pay. One of the two.
I'll just give you some of the free stuff that I've got hanging around.
Yeah.
50 quid, cold hard cash. There you go.
Yeah. You can get some Ultra Zero Drop shoes.
Or you can have some bright yellow Brooks Calderas for the trails.
You'll have to go down to the East Anglia Children's Hospice charity shop to get them back there.
They'll still be there a year later.
Oh, mate, they'll still be there.
50p, absolute bargain.
I know. But yeah, anyway. Well, DM us your predictions. Everyone, just send us a prediction.
Don't be an Instagram post or something like that.
Oh, a post, yeah? All right, I like that.
Whack it in the comments.
That's a much better way to do it.
Otherwise, we'll have... I don't know how many people are going to listen to this.
50 million, probably.
50 million DMs, we'll never be able
inundated.
To get through
it. Absolutely inundated.
Yeah, one guess each as well. I know what you guys are like.
Lovely stuff. Right, let's go through some race results or running news. There's quite a lot to go through this week. So we've sort of split it into the UK and the US. A lot of it is just sort of results for this week's in terms of the news. So we've got three British records to have a little bit of a chat about first. We've got Keely Hodgkinson, first race of the year. She ran a 600 meter indoor. Is it a world record or lead?
They call it world best.
World best, right.
So I think it means it's not ratified as a record, but it is the best ever timed 600. So essentially it's a world record.
Cool. But just for statistics, she ran 1:23, which, pretty rapid. It's always hard to figure out like how that sort of relates to normal distances, because obviously we have 400, 800 meter races. It's rare to see a 600 meter result. So, I wonder what that would sort of equate to in terms of 800 meter time. It's pretty fast anyway. Very fast.
No, that is fast. I guess you just do 400 pace and then, you know, the 800 runners try and hold on, I guess. It's cool when they do 600s. It's the same with the 1K. Because you get people from the distance below and the distance above having kind of an equal shot at it, which is really cool. That's why Whiteman's so good at 1K. He got that British record, didn't he? Because he's got the speed of an 800 runner and the strength of a 15. He's an animal at the 1K. So, yeah, that was a good... she probably won't give a shit, I reckon, you know, about just like a 600 season opener, but she probably just went, oh, I'm just going to run it and, you know, did that, probably unlocked a nice bonus or something for a world best.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It'll be cracking.
Probably got a nice little paycheck for that 123 minutes of running.
I know. Yeah.
But the like of Keely Hodgkinson isn't necessarily going to get out of bed for a 600 meter indoor world lead or best, is she?
Mm.
Yeah, well, what is interesting, it shows you, I think, in these early races, how integral the overall process is for training. So when you see a lot of these athletes, like a bit like we saw Josh Kerr do a half marathon, you're going to see, you know, Whiteman's done a few 3Ks, Keely Hodgkinson doing this. It's like, it just shows you how far ahead they're thinking in the season. So this 600 to us, like I've just said, she probably doesn't give a shit. And I'm guessing, you know, could take it or leave it that she's got the record. But from like a process point of view, that 123 to her coaches and to her might mean a lot for where she thinks she is in the, you know, overall goal of where she's getting to with the 800. Like,
mm-hmm.
Is that way above what they expected? Is it bang on expectations? Like, we don't really know, but I'm sure the people behind it who are far smarter than us will have like an exact, you know, okay, that puts you here in the progress. We need to work on this. We need to change this. You've got a lot of this, which, you know, I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah, for sure. On to the other two British records that went down this week. We had Sam Atkins, who I think recently signed for Puma. Maybe he's been with them for about a year now. But he beat Mo Farah's indoor 3,000 metre record by 0.5 of a second, running 7:31 in a pretty fast race, which we'll talk about when we move on to the US times. And we also had Dina Asher-Smith ran 7:04 for a 60 meter British record as well, which is great to see Dina back racing fit and getting British records again. So good stuff for them too on their first races of the season.
That's good. Dina, I think, is great because, you know, she was off the boil a little bit for whatever reason, and people in this sport are so quick to forget. It's like you're only as good as your last race sort of thing, and people kind of, you know, didn't slate her, but kind of thought she was off the boil. To come back and do that just shows how hard she must have been working over the winter, come back with a bang. So that's really good. And Sam Atkin, that's like, that guy loves Boston. He's gone there a couple of times now. He did last year as well. And just, I think he smashed out a 5K last year. But 7:31 is like, I don't know if he's going to do Euro indoors or what, but like he could win it with that time. It's whether he can actually... You know, he's clearly great at time trialing, but in championships, he's crap. Like he just falls to pieces. Often
I was
drops
say,
out. Or
he seems to drop out. Like I remember watching him over the summer quite a lot, and it was just DNF after DNF, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's a shame because it's become a bit of a joke. Like it's become like a bit of like a, oh, you can run as fast as you want, but when you get there, what are you going to do? So I really would love him to go to indoors or if this or outdoors, whatever it's going to be, and have the confidence of the fast times. He's run, you know, low 13s, maybe even 12 high, and for 5K, and 7:31, that is absolutely rapid. Like it's 4 minute mile pace, isn't it, pretty much? Like, you know, he should go in with a chance of winning. I just hope he doesn't take someone's GB spot or whatever and then not give it the performance it deserves. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
That's fair.
And the only final results to mention in terms of the UK was George Mills. He ran a 1500 meter world lead, which was pretty impressive, especially the way he ran it, pretty much from the front the whole way, gapped the whole field. He ran 3:35. So he's 5 seconds quicker than Callum, but not for long. I reckon Callum's going to catch him up this summer.
I don't know about that. He beat his outdoor PB as well, which again shows
shows you how much
your winter can do. Yeah, he's run 36 low, I think. That was his first sub 3:36.
Wow.
So to do that
indoors as well,
where it's significantly harder, again, it just shows the progress. And it's really good to show, like, for people like me that are trying to chase times not as quick as that, but, you know, get closer. He's like, he's been at it for years now, cracking on. He's still young, but he's been, you know, really going at it. And he might take off half a second every season, but if you can keep doing that for long enough, you eventually get there. So yeah, good on him. And he's going to go to Euros now, no doubt. With that, that's an automatic qualifier, I think, because he won a gold event. So he'll get in on ranking, I'm sure. So it'll be good to see how he does there.
Definitely good stuff.
The whole OAC, like on running setup, like we'll talk about some of the results from the States as well, and some of the guys in there. But the, you know, I think George Mills has been out in Dalstrom, is it, in South Africa, with a few of the other boys for a little while, and it's just they are onto something, really, aren't they? Like, they've got the setup at OAC Europe and over in America. It just seems to be sensational, and now they've got like a spike that can compete with the best in the business as well. It just, they all just seem to be running at their skin. So yeah, on stock is flipping through the roof at the minute.
I think it's like the Oregon project and the Bauman days, right? But they've just done it so much more transparently. So I think you fall in love is way too deep, but you get a connection with almost the characters in the story. Do you get what I mean? Like when Ritzenheim's speaking, and I love running, so I'm biased, of course. But when I'm hearing Ritzenheim, I'm like wanting to run through brick walls for the guy. You know, when he's telling me about what Ollie Hall's going to do and this person's going to do that, I'm like, mate, I want to be there. I'm there. Yeah. Just tell me, like, I'll do whatever you say. Do you know what I mean? It's like really motivational. Whereas you never heard any of that kind of stuff from Bauman and Schumacher and stuff. It was far more like, almost like it was sensitive material, and the detail of the sessions could never be revealed. And, you know,
it was very mysterious, wasn't it? It wasn't like, it was hard to be a fan, I think. Whereas for the OAC guys, like, it's so easy to get behind them. And, you know, from the stuff that they put out on Instagram to like the race results and just like the general camaraderie that they seem to have, like the Coffee Club podcast, and just, I don't know, the whole setup just seems pretty dreamlike, to be honest. Like, I think there'd probably be a lot of people who would love to be part of a setup like that.
Yeah, well, just to watch, just to go and actually see what it's like to be in that environment, I think would be so interesting, because how you can get yourself in a headspace to do some of the sessions they do, I think is crazy.
Yeah, and on that, this week on YouTube, there's some content from the OAC guys doing and the ladies actually doing a training session where they basically ran a 4-minute mile indoors at altitude, and it's all on YouTube, and you've got the coach Ritzenhain just absolutely sprinting around the track trying to get these guys to run certain paces. It's, you can just see the passion that the coach has got for the athletes, and they're all working really hard for each other. So yes, really inspiring to see. Moving on to some of domestic scene. We had some cross country, the Northerns, Midlands and Southerns cross country. So we'll just go through the winners of those. In the North, we had Joe Stewart. He took the win. In the Midlands, we had hoka athlete Jack Gray, teammate of Callum's at Cambridge. He took the win for Midlands. And in the Southerns, we had James Kingston take the win, running for Tunbridge AC. So yeah, really good running from those guys. Anything to mention there?
No, really good. Yeah, shout out Jack. He deserves that. He could run Southerns, obviously, because he's runs for Cambridge, but he always likes to go back to Midlands, where he's from, and do it. So no, I was really pleased for him. And he beat a couple of really good guys, actually. So I don't know what the field was like for the Northerns or Southerns. I think there will have always a few good guys. But that was good racing. It'll be interesting to see how the winners of each of those do at the National, because I find that quite interesting to see who was missing that potentially could have beaten them. Like, you think about the Southerns, you've got like Mohammed, Zach Mohammed, who clearly haven't done it, you know.
Yeah.
How far ahead will they be of James Kingston? It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then finally, we got some US results. As we've talked quite a lot about OAC, and probably the golden boy at the moment for those is Jared Neguse, and he ran 7:28, which is insane for 3K indoors, got an American record. His coach was saying he was expecting him to run something special around 7:30, 7:32, and he ran 7:28 for an American record, which is just incredible. And then we had a few NCAA records as well. Callum, you're probably best to talk us through
those. Yeah, so the 3K with Neguse, so the context for this race, Neguse had the NCAA record, and obviously now he's post-collegiate. In the race where he breaks the American record, his college record was also taken from him by Drew Bosley from NAU, who ran 7:36. So, like, ironically, he paced somebody to break his own record, but, you know, subsequently he broke a record himself. So that was just a lightning fast race. You know, you've got American record gone, British record gone, NCAA record gone. You know, three of the most respected distance records in the world, pretty much. So yeah, they all went. And then in the men's 5K, Dylan Jacobs, who is at Tennessee, I think, ran 13:11 for the NCAA record. And that was obviously a fast race. That was 12:51, wasn't it? Woody Kincaid, who broke the American record. So that's we have not even got that written down actually. So we should have added that.
Did you guys see that race?
Yeah, I've watched it back on Flow Track. I've put it on YouTube. I watched it back. Yeah.
Yeah, mad how he comes back after Joe looks like he's basically got it wrapped up, doesn't he?
Yeah, Klecker just went for it, and the commentators were saying, weren't they? It's like, oh, it's all Klecker against the clock, and then Woody UK just smokes him.
I'd love to see what he did for his last lap.
And then there was a female record as well. Caitlin Toohey broke the mile record. I think she ran 4:24 or 4:26. One of those.
4:24, I think.
For the women's record, and she's just a beast. I mean, like, if you can win the cross country and you can break the mile record, that's serious range, you know, because for the women, they still run a 6K cross country on a hilly course in freezing Oklahoma. And then you go indoors and run a mile as fast as you can. And you're still the quickest. That's, you know, you just built different. So, yeah, I love the American stuff. I find it really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to have learned a little bit more about how that all works, really. Obviously, you've got firsthand experience. It's nice to hear your insight on that. Should we jump into some listeners' questions to wrap up the podcast this week?
Yeah, I think there's a few interesting ones, particularly for Tom and yourself. I think there's quite a few marathon related ones which you guys will be good at answering.
Yeah, so I'll kick us off with Dustin from Australia. He sent his email in, I think it was a couple of weeks ago now. So yeah, thanks for your email. He said his current PB is 20:50, and the thought of running sub 4 per kilometer pace seems a distance that's just out of reach. Was there a time in your running journeys where you thought the same, and especially as you moved on to running low sub 3 minute kilometer pace? Like, basically, how did you do that? I think is his question.
I don't want to give a boring answer, right? Because the boring answer really here is just like, you keep running, right? And it's just consistency, and it's piling the blocks on top of each other and trusting that the more you do something, the better you get. It's a bit like when you're a child and you're learning to read. It's like, it's obvious, the more books you read, the more words you're going to learn. Do you see what I mean? Because you're just consuming more things. I think the other thing I would say is, like, in the same vein, is not to focus on goals that are too far ahead. So if you start running and you think, oh, I can't even get under 20 minutes, how will I ever get under 15? It's like a very defeatist attitude. You've got to take it as like, okay, how can I get 20, then 19, 30, then 19, and kind of break off chunks at a time. But I think everyone's thought, like, yeah, bloody hell, I'm never going to be able to get that sort of time. And now I run reps at paces where I would have been happy to race at that. And I'm like, you know what, Callum, you were a couple of seconds off today, but have some context, because a year ago or 6 months ago, you would have been really happy with that. So, you know, just take it on the chin sort of thing. So, yeah, I think you just got to take everything with some perspective.
Yeah, for sure. And with that, he says his time is currently 20:50. I can remember a time when I was trying to break 20 minutes for 5K as well. And at that time, it did feel like my sort of ability or fitness had sort of plateaued around that point. So you might want to look at mixing your training up a little bit. It might be a case that you need to start having a bit more focus on intervals, or adding a long run, or maybe slightly increasing your overall volume. If you're not seeing an improvement, then maybe your training's plateaued a little bit.
Yeah, spot on, really. I think similar. The only way that I realised it was possible to break 20 minutes was just by, I don't know, meeting people who had run that quick and realising what they were doing compared to what I was doing, realising how long they'd been running compared to how long I'd been running. And there's so many ways, right? But not to put a downer on things, but from like trawling through Let's Run and all these other forums from way back when I first started running, there are all of these threads about like genetic potential and whether any male or female can run X time with the right training, or whether there is just a cap. And obviously there's a genetic cap. Like, I know I'm never going to run 12:56 for 5K. But do you think that is still... Do you think that there are some people... I'm not saying Dustin is in this category, but there are some people who will never break 20 minutes for 5K, and it's just the way it is. Like, they're just not genetically predisposed to be able to run that fast 4 or 5 kilometers. Do you think that's a thing?
No. Well, probably the answer is yes, but I don't think it's a way to think in terms of, like, I think it's a middle ground between your answer, where it's like, some people, not just genetically, but say lifestyle, they're not predisposed to doing it. So let's say that Dustin could, let's say he didn't have to work tomorrow because he wins the lottery, and he also wants to do extreme dieting, and he also wants to invest hundreds of thousands in altitude camps and getting the best coach and getting the best kit, and he decides for 5 years he's going to commit his life to everything. We don't know how far he could potentially go. But for most people, for both the reasons that they practically can't do that, and also the mental health would probably suffer loads, you know, like if I stopped drinking, I'd be better at running, but I love going out for a beer because it fuels me to keep going training, and I just enjoy spending time with my mates. So therefore it's a nice kind of trade-off. Do you see what I mean? So I think it's not that you can't, it's that you have to have some realism of like, without making extreme sacrifices, how far could I go? And is my 5K PB worth, you know, X, Y, and Z to me? Is it worth having a shit life? Probably not. Do you know what I mean? So I think you just got to weigh it up.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, 100%. This one's a question for me, so I'll quickly go through it. It says, it's from Ator. Ator. What a name. Anyway, he says, how do you cope?
What was that accent?
I don't know, like a robot or something.
So you didn't do your Australian accent for Dustin, but you brought out Ator in some sort Ator. Of Jurassic Park kind of
thing. Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Sorry, Ator.
Right, shall I ask the question because it's for you?
Oh, go on then.
All right, Ben, this is from Ator. How do you cope running indoors on the treadmill? I get so hot, my heart rate skyrockets. Do you take a fan?
So I don't take a fan with me. I'm lucky that my gym is pretty well air-conditioned. And I think I've mentioned this before, but I basically try and wear as little as possible. So sore vest, very, very lightweight. Would be my choice, and yeah, some short shorts. Obviously I don't walk in the gym, well some days I do, but at the moment it's about 2 degrees, so I usually wear a few more layers and then take them off just before I get on the treadmill. So yeah, that's how I cope, run basically naked.
So no layers and just get through it.
Yep, or find a gym with good air conditioning would be my advice.
Public indecency basically is the short answer.
Yeah, once you're on the treadmill I think it's acceptable, but sometimes you get a few funny looks when I walk through the weight section in 2-inch split shorts. But anyway.
Yeah, well, there you go. The next question is quite a good one for Tom, I think.
Yeah, for sure. It's also from Tom. So he's probably like written this one in himself. But he says, how can I keep a consistent training block? He's currently doing Manchester Marathon in April whilst nursing niggles or injuries.
I actually think that's a better question for you, Ben, because I hate to say it, but throughout the training block itself, I wasn't aware that I had any, but I didn't have any niggles or injuries at all to really speak of. But yeah, I think the way that you keep consistent whilst dealing with those niggles and injuries is, to be honest, being sensible. Like, it's not necessarily rocket science, just like what you've done, Ben, in the last couple of weeks, where you've had days where, you know, you've done just a really easy park run with your sister on a Saturday because you were feeling a bit niggly from the day before, or you've, you know, adapted your training just to give yourself a bit of an extra rest day. Like, you're always, if you're training for a marathon, there's probably going to be something when you wake up in the morning that doesn't feel quite right. Even the run that we went on in Berlin on that Friday morning, you're saying your hip was a little bit tight and didn't feel like fantastic. So there's always going to be something. I guess it's just about being sensible. And if it means doing, you know, 5 reps instead of 6, but you finish those 5 reps healthier than if you were to do the 6th rep, then that's way better than gritting your teeth and getting through it. Yeah.
I think from this question as well, I actually shortened it down a little bit, but I remember Tom was actually saying that he seems to sort of hit a certain mileage and then he gets a lot of like impact related fatigue, that sort of stuff. So if it is the case, I'd recommend trying to, if you want to build some more sort of aerobic work into your training, then just trying to do a bit more cross training and strength work to try and increase your overall volume without having to run more and more miles. Because yeah, if you get a niggle that then turns into injury, then that's going to set you back. So that would be my advice when it comes to keeping consistent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Solid answers, that, boys. Good advice.
Should we do one more question?
Do you think our advice is good?
Yeah, I've no idea actually. I've never thought of
it. You know, because we're such an echo chamber here. Like, we just obviously we'll slightly call each other out if something's completely wrong. But like, we just all say stuff, don't we? And like, the people out there Some people will believe it. Some people might be sat there thinking that's just completely wrong. Andy probably listens to all this and thinks that we're just chatting rubbish because he actually knows what he's talking about. So.
Yeah,
well, he's still listening. Like... He's still listening, bless him. So we must be doing something right.
Yeah, if you think our advice is good, let us know.
And alternatively, if you don't think it's good, then also let us know.
Yeah, we're In fact, if we're good, just don't say anything. Tell us if we're bad.
Yeah,
we should probably say that we didn't start this podcast thinking like, oh, look at us. We know so much about running. Let's tell everybody how great we are and how much we know. It's, to be honest, we started it just to talk shit about running for an hour or so every week. So yeah, it's a good point, Callum.
I was just reflecting. I was like, you know, because I say it as if we've loads of confidence, and then I think, you know, maybe that was wrong.
All you can do is speak your truth, right? All you can do is lean on experiences that you've had.
Yeah.
Put that out there in the universe, and if it helps one person who listens, or it helps, you know, just someone who listens tell someone else who's got a similar issue, and you help one person as a result of it, then it's worth it, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah, so pass the pod.
Exactly, pass the pod.
Yep. So should we do one last question for this week?
Yeah, make it a good one, Ben.
All right, well, we've got James, Howie, or Tim. Which one do you want?
Not James. James, respectfully, will answer your question privately. He wants to know how we set up our watches, and you know there's so many people out there that couldn't give a crap about that watch. Just tells the time, tells the pace, tells the heart rate. Done. Next.
All right, let's go for Tim then, because he's out in Sweden. You know I love talking about Sweden. Anyway, he's doing a Six Lake Marathon in August in Sweden, and he's finding it hard to balance work life with running. He gets up at 4:30, and he doesn't. And he doesn't get home until 5 p.m. and then he has to take the dog out for an hour walk as soon as he gets home, plus make tea and eat tea, and then find time to run. So his question is...
Oh, he makes his tea before he eats it. Thank God.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank God.
That's his words, not mine. I didn't do a very good job of reading that out, though, admittedly. But anyway, then his question is, any tips on marathon training around work and life, or do I just have to suck it up? Just grind it out.
Well, the first thing I've got to say, because I've not done a marathon, is meal prep, Tim. That's a little life skill you can learn there, because you won't have to make your tea and eat it. You'll just have to eat it. So I reckon if you meal prep once a week, you'll be good to go. Anyway, boys, over to you for the marathon expertise.
Yeah, I reckon get rid of the dog as well, so you don't have to take that for an hour walk.
Oh, 100%. Or just run with the dog, kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah. Any sensible advice, Tom?
Yeah, on a serious note... If you've got to get up for work at 4:30 in the morning, you're obviously not running before.
Mm.
What I would question whether you get a lunch break at all, because I know if there's some days where I just can't face waking up at 6 in the morning or whatever and then getting out for a run before starting work. So I'll just, if it's a run less than an hour, I'll just go on a lunch break. So I don't know if you've got that option. If you haven't, like Callum said, meal prep is definitely the easiest way. Like I'll always make, like I've tried to get in the habit, especially since the start of this year, of putting more time and effort into making food at a time where I've got time to make it, if that makes sense, and just make enough of it that I can have it for lunch the next couple of days. Because that way, you know, if you get back, if you go for a run after work and you come back, you've got something in the fridge just there to eat. And it sounds stupid, like it sounds like the most obvious thing in the world, but it makes such a big difference. Like if I know I've got food waiting in the fridge, it's like, yeah, it's a massive relief. Because oftentimes you're probably the same. When you get back from a run, you just sit there for a bit in your kit, and then you have a shower. And then before you know it, like 1/2 hour, 45 minutes has gone by. And it's, yeah, I think it's, you just got to manage your time the best you possibly can. Up at 4:30 and back by 5 p.m. is tough going, but yeah, you just got to do those little things to try and make it a little bit easier for you, I think, and just accept that you're probably not going to be able to run 100 mile weeks with that working schedule. So quit your job, I reckon.
Yeah, that's what I did.
What would be good as well is obviously on the weekends, if you do have a flexible schedule, really try and get more quality in on the weekends.
Yeah.
So don't focus too much on your volume. And just make sure that you're very strategic about, okay, if I can only focus 2 days on running, make sure that Saturday or Sunday you get in something that's very specific or very, you know, like good quality for what you're training for, which in your case is a marathon. And to be honest, like I just looked at the marathon, it's in August. So it's so far away that if you start to build a routine now and figure out what works, you can, might actually be able to find something that's pretty good, and you might only need to run 40 miles a week or 35 miles a week with a bit of quality and be in a better place than, you know, you were if not. So yeah, that's one thing. The other thing you could do is buy, like, if you've got the ability, you could get like a bike at home, like a static bike or something, so then you don't have to worry about going out when it's light or whatever. You can just do like half an hour at home when you have time in the evening, bit of cross training or something. Which is another thing that comes to mind.
I think we've, you know, obviously taken the piss a little bit on the answer to this question.
Massive.
But first and foremost, I think it's amazing that you've got a schedule work-wise as grueling as that, and yet you're still committed to running. You know, obviously waking up at 4:30 is not ideal. I don't think anybody wants to do that. And without knowing exactly what your job is and whether you like it, whether you don't, it's hard to comment on that, but just give yourself credit for having the willpower and the desire to get out and run at all with a working schedule like that. Because there's plenty of people who would just get home, get a takeaway and vegetate on the sofa before they have to wake up again. So fair play for even signing up to a marathon.
Yeah, I think that's some really good advice.
Final advice is buy a slow cooker as well. I know it sounds stupid, but that is a game changer, because we've just told you to meal prep as a joke. And you're thinking, oh, meal prep, can't be arsed with that. Get a slow cooker, mate. You're up at 4:30 anyway. Just get up at 4:15, because 15 minutes of that time is not going to kill you. And then in that 15 minutes, slang a little bit of beef in there, a few carrots, things like that. You've got a casserole.
Slang in.
You've got a casserole.
Slang a bit of beef in there.
Mate, I'm telling you, you've got a casserole when you get back. I used to do that before morning training when I used to train at 6 a.m. on a Thursday football when I was at uni. Game changer, coming home to a casserole. So, yeah, do that.
What time did you consume that casserole? Were you coming back at like 9 in the morning having casserole for breakfast or what?
No, of course not, mate. I'm not an animal. I would have my I'd have my granola when I came home, wouldn't I?
Of course.
And then at lunchtime, I would tend to have my mackerel. And then... and then
caviar for dinner.
No. And then in the evening, because it'd been on a low heat the whole day, I'd come back and I'd either put some dumplings on top of the thing, like my grandma taught me, Pauline, or I would... just have the casserole with, I don't know what I used to have it with, maybe some potatoes or something. But yeah, nice meal.
That is so northern. It's unbelievable. A bit of slanged beef and some
potatoes. I didn't just do casserole in it. I did chili. I did all sorts of stuff.
Lovely stuff. I think that wraps up our advice for the week. There's plenty of running and non-running advice there. If you want to make a casserole, drop Callum a DM on Instagram. I'm sure he'll give you the recipe, Tim.
Or email my grandma.
Exactly. If you'd like to submit your questions for our great advice or not so great advice, you can be the judge of that. You can do so via runitfreewayspodcast@gmail.com. There's a link to it on the Instagram as well, if that's easier. But finally, let's wrap this podcast up as we're hitting probably the longest episode yet. Looking ahead at next week, what have we got in the plan, boys?
Nothing for me. Just another week of training. So yeah, quick one.
Mm-hmm.
What about yourself, Ben? What are you doing?
I'm planning, probably biggest week of running in terms of mileage, trying to hit 100 miles. And then it'll be 2 weeks before a little bit of a 10K race, which I'll talk about a little bit more next week.
What's the name of the race, really quick?
Valentine's 10K in Norwich.
Thank you.
Oh, that's romantic, isn't it?
It is.
I'm getting a washing machine delivered tomorrow. So that's exciting. I'll finally be able to wash some running kit. And then I'm racing on Sunday.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah.
Anything else to add, boys?
What time does the race start and where is it?
Oh, God, I couldn't even tell you. Ben, you'll probably know better than me.
I think it's an 11 night. O'clock, actually. Oh, I think it's a late one, yeah. And it's in central London, so
I think I'm going to come down and watch, actually.
Please,
I'll be there.
Down.
I'm watching.
All right, boys, we'll get together then. We'll go for a little bit of lunch or something afterwards. Ben, if your sister gets a PB, she can come.
Yeah, that sounds good.
But only if she gets the PB, if not.
Well, it's her first ever race, so I think she's pretty much guaranteed. But
it's as if
she'll be joining us.
Perfect, right. I'll dig out the Pizza Hut gift card.
Right, with that pretty much wraps up episode 7. I'll let you boys get on with your evening. But yeah, see you next week.
Cheers, boys.
Right. Nice one, chaps. Bye-bye.
See you later. We'll be right back.